this. This is not democracy. There is another word for it. They call this plutocracy. Once we had many gods, and then that once became one again. And now, once again, that many make return in the shape of living men. We are told that we grew up and out of the feudal cup. But am I not now the consuming territory? The inessential agent, born from inessential hereditary? We need not hide from our shared anarchy. Let us not hide with our fathers born to scared men. Let us reveal us. Let us defeat men. Let us redeem us. Let us redeem them.
Wow, thank you, Ali. Next we have Seamus Harrington.
Come on, Seamus.
Another one about words. I have this out because the intelligence of words. Windfall. I noticed him as I stepped over the footbridge. There he was, a few meters away from the flyover, with a half-eaten apple. He fussed with it on top of a low brick wall. I passed close enough to catch the overripe scent, to detect teeth marks and bite-shaped edges. The crow paused, gazed into the middle distance past me, ignoring forbidden fruit. Pretending not to notice, since two can play that game, but watching closely out of the corner of my eye, I sauntered past. Shortly he resumed fussing and strutting while he pecked and poked with his stubby wet beak. In a blur of speed he contracted the core as it started to roll off the wall. A right claw, a schoolboy's wrinkled grey sock, trapped his prize as he clamped it, like a practiced goalkeeper pausing. More pecking followed, but still holding on, moving off slightly. The last I saw was a pose, right leg resting on his prize, ignoring a passing fruit delivery truck. The victor relaxed again, most feathers unruffled in the autumn breeze, jet black head tilted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Seamus. And next we have Owen.
Eugene.
Sorry.
My apologies.
A rose-coloured doorway, a 90-acre farm, a hagauna, the fording place of the calves, Coomkeen, Mastrock country, ash tree plantation to pay future fees of Kiev-born Peter Crowley. Fire. Three West Cork brigades fought the blaze. The next time we will be ready. Trawlers tied up in Durrus, Castletown, Berehaven, Rosmuff, Castlet, Weedor and Killypex. They removed the door from the cottage and returned the wounded horsemen to the big house. Hooray, Henry, take it on the back. Ken Loach, the wind that shakes the barry, shoot to kill. Sinead.
Thank you, Eugene. And next we have Alexis.
Yeah.
Feminism in the First World. Reason one. A man from the age of 11 watches hardcore porn in school on his cool friend's phone. A woman from the age of 11 thinks love is Jane Austen and Justin Bieber. What do you think happens? We hear this in the First World, patriarchy doesn't exist as much as the feminists insist. Well, most of the internet is porn, and my heart is worn from the different expectation to me of man in every first world nation.
Woo!
Yeah!
Thanks, Alexis. And next we have the Spurs player.
Mass Effect, and I've said it here a few times, and probably a few of you might know it. I finally wrote its sequel, and in a year, kind of like in the back of my mind, and finally it's on paper. And it's basically like a love poem between like a moth I saw a couple of days ago, and it was like hovering around the light bulb, and it's like the difference between the moon and the light up here. And what could be the difference, and what's happened to the empire of the moths. So this poem's called Empress. I should read down this poem off by heart, maybe. Empress. Once, moths destruct a ruinous twin moon and hit its parts across the twilight and stars. Moths try to destruct an excited, luminant light. Its lustrous hides the exterior twilight, but the mocking moon remains a light bulb, and their empress can't raise the glass. She sits there in the heated surface as if in trance. I just caught their empress. I could see she built her wings from the scales of tea leaves, with subtle hints of the aurora borealis. I cupped her in my palms, and between my fingers she sheathes the sun's rays. I fall in love with the Moth Empress of the many fallen empires. Moths search in every light, as if the Empress is imprisoned in the needles inside, stuck. In mesmer antis search, they rest on walls, push off and scuttle around the light bulbs. As 999 winds all squall to find their empress locked inside. My fists feel tempted to crush the living, silking, fidgeting, clicking, ticking moth. Her feathers brush the fronts of my fingers as if to caress. I open the front door and invite the energy wind in, and I pretend to throw her into flight. She rides in the wind's knees as she rises. And put me out of sight, returns to her empire, the real moon, leaving me hollow tonight.
Thank you, Philip. And next we have Patricia Walsh.
And the title of this poem comes from somebody I saw T-shirt, and the T-shirt said, reality is illusion caused by a deficiency of alcohol. So here it goes. Normalcy calls for narcotics again. A slow burn of hitting and running on footpaths. Chasing tails of paramount fall, discerning. Reviewing sober delusions at a snail's pace. Regular moving slowly, nicely balanced. Tipping away at the coal face strictly enforced. Sparse castle stayed, exuding productivity, in sight, out of mind, always clamorings. The low phone rings to the distaste of all, concentration bottled to an open will, creating for posterity a fait accompli, on some road to resurrect a neglected fancy. Once the future kings declare like to like, reheated discussions as what might be, productive overheated, declaring the station we all aspire to without reason. Returning to lost favours, cost rescinded, celebrating the ordinary being as is. No news being good news, property being theft, humdrum experience beating the door down. A cup to extinguish all others, second jaw, lubricate the present moment at tea. Later in a moment, squeeze things to motion. censoring drinks arriving into first parties. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. And next we have Charles Clark.
I still remember a lad being trashed. He turned up late, mid-morning, that was a decent excuse. I slipped it off, he said. He was a Thatcher's son, and a tear rolled down his cheek. Oh.
Thank you, Charles. Next we have Sheila Hunt.
She
had a run for her books.
Oh, she's gone, she?
Yeah. Okay. Right. Max Creighton. Yay! Got a fiber chat? Yes. Oh, cool. Right. Okay. Oh, lovely. I usually the book hand to try just want some tea time. Yeah, I do it standing up. I will hope for the best.
Hello. Don't sing into the mic, just let the mic be in front of you. So
I can hear it, the practice is a different thing. Yeah, like I never sound and then I go to perform. Okay. This song, you know when you see something like, it's beautiful, it's all not green, very. She had the most gorgeous testimony, and she looked like a child, she was like a fragile butterfly. And it was, she said it was unspeakable. She described her flight through the desert with her mother. And it was so moving. I kind of wrote a poem on the spot, kind of for her. And then I put it to music at tea time. So I am cocky to do anything so quickly. So she went to the heart. Only stars are with us now in this barren desert. Whisper not, my precious child, of our living torment. Never let your story of love leak out to them. Never let your heart melt in music to be heard by them. To the mountains, to eternity, choices are stark. Conceal your shine, stem the flow of being passed back again in dark. Never let a vision of barbarity sink its teeth in skin. Keep your petals tender sweet to be a human being again. So it's the music at tea time. I hope I had to work it.
Don't say it to the mic, you'll be waking up.
But I can't hear myself.
Trust
who
the mic,
know, but
the
stars with us now on this barren desert. Whisper now, my precious child, of your living torment. Never let your story of love leak out to them. Never let your heart melt in music to be heard by them. To the mountains, to eternity, choices are stars. Conceal your shine, stem the flow of being passed back again in dark. Never let a vision of barbarity stick its teeth in skin. Keep your petals tender, sweet, for you need to be a human being again. Only stars with us now in this barren desert. Of our living torment.
have Jack Shetham. Is it right? I'm not sure if it's Shortland. It's Shortland, Jack Shortland. Sorry. This is for my daughter Gillian, and if anybody knows her, they will see how it wrote itself as well. I could see her life in her newborn face, my girl with her androgynous spirit. She smelled of her own earthiness. Her anima latched onto my breast, no bother to her, no threats. I laughed. I would have no work to do with her. Solid baby body, her birthed limbs held the flesh of survival in the womb, bigger than her brothers before her. I could feel it off her, her humour, her ability to lead, to nurture, to curse warmly, to soothe us all. That infant fist she would hold for life, to hurl us litter, to feel the leather of it, to mind the hammer for her grandfather. She would want no princess dress, not my Superman in pyjamas, not my transformer in disguise. Small, strong woman, moon woman, dog loyal to her family, caretaker, craftsman, cat whisperer, best recruit, solving our struggles, soldiering for us, chanting for us, dancing with us, and touching somewhere in the core of us. And my notion that she was here before, walking the walls of the fort, looking out at her Cork, her accent a part of older lives, her real respect for their fight and their work and her sound humanity for it all. My little girl's dark eyes told me of a kind of knowing in our bonding and our mutual need of a back rub. Her full lips, a piece of her heritage, so very Irish, so fucking beautiful, and none of it any of my doing.
Thank you, that was lovely. And next we have Cedric.
That one didn't actually make work, but it's something of a very true story. She was his son. She was his friend. They knew they would part eventually, but it didn't matter. After all, today's separation was temporary. She hopped into the car. He did not. She turned around, faced him, and waved back, smiling bright, like the sun she was. As the train departed, he followed, keeping pace with every step, like a moth flapping towards a fleeting fire in the evening. He would never catch her, but was captivated, motivated to push forward, increasing his acceleration to keep up with the train. She, guilty witness, smiled brighter in admiration. The light made him lighter, hasten further, produce effort beyond limitation. Each step felt as heavy as his entire body, each muscle of his legs burning, elongated, consuming his ever-shortening breath. He was at his limit, and time was still. He would never reach the speed of that light, but finally had his fill. The key end was the forbidden frontier that stopped the shooting star. The burnt-out boy stood there, breathing out the fire that spread from his leg to his lungs. But it did not matter. Her warm smile was etched in his memory. So he watched the train carry her away in the sunset, and he smiled back at it.
All right.
Thank you, Cedric. And next we have Sophie.
I came unprepared, but I went through this book, which is kind of 3 years old by now, and found some
than that I thought I'd do. Because it's the season for it. Oh, come on. Hit me again. Sorry about that. So, dream spaces. It was a byword for me. The sun is rising, honeydew colors into the silence of dawn. Spaces between dreams and waking becoming smaller, the honeydew melting into drops of rain, trickling down the window pane, digging deeper into pillows, trying to drown out the dawning day as the crow chick's cries pierce into the last spaces of my dreams, waking to the thought of the most ugly baby call that Mother Nature has ever produced. It's done. I'm up. Shaking the dream spaces off my wings with drops of honeydew raining from my black feathers.
Thank you, Sue. And last but not least, we have Rab.
Hey.
Two short poems about tigers. If you know the point of balance, you can settle the details. If you can settle the details, you can stop running around. Once you stop running around, your mind will become calm. When your mind becomes calm, you can think in front of a tiger. When you can think in front of a tiger, you will surely succeed. The second poem about tigers concerns me having an argument with my girlfriend at the time. My tiger scratched and spat and swore. She beat the ground and let out a mighty roar with whisker stiff and talon sharp. She scared me, silly, she scared me, daft. She chased me up and down a tree. And just when I thought that I was free, she lashed me with her velvet claw and rattled on the teeth of my lower jaw. I wasn't standing for that. I nearly punched her back right on the jaw, but from her eyes, the tears, they flowed. She stood her ground, she growled loud, I turned around and jumped about and I flew as fast as I could flee right up to the top of a great big tree. But when I stopped and looked back down to the ground, there wasn't any sign that there was a tiger around. I quickly shunned back down the tree, I searched as far as I could see, I looked up here, I looked down there. At last I found my tiger's lair. It was a cave full of bright and beautiful things with chests of gold and diamond rings with human skulls with teeth in there. There was many a marvellous thing in there. Just then, I saw her and my tiger lay upon a bed of straw and fresh hay, the tears still coursing down her cheeks. She looked like she'd be slept for weeks. But I crept in close with a quiet glide and I lay me down there by her side and she looked at me and I could see this tiger woman really loved me. The tiger's eyes burning bright like a white moon on a black, black night. Tiger woman's graceful and fair. I love tigers because tigers dare.